You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A multi-billion-dollar arms deal agreed upon by the Trump administration and Saudi Arabia could be stalled due to a bipartisan move in the U.S. Senate. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut and Republican Senator Todd Young of Indiana are requesting a report from the administration on Saudi Arabia's human rights record. The move could trigger a vote in Congress to halt the agreement, which has been largely unpopular with lawmakers in both parties and both chambers. Another bipartisan duo is working on another piece of legislation that could block the deal. Our next guest is here to talk about the arms agreement, how Congress might block the sale, and how it could all impact U.S. diplomatic relations in the Middle East. Saeed Khan is a senior lecturer in Near Eastern and Asian Studies at Wayne State University. Saeed, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me back, Rob.
Can you talk about what's at stake with this arms deal, the U.S. allowing arms to be sold and selling arms to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates?
Well, the current deal involves an $8 billion package, which is not only to export weapons to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, but it is also within that going to allow Raytheon, a defense contractor, to in fact build bomb parts in Saudi Arabia, ostensibly for use in the now four-year-old Yemen war. This is going to include control systems, guidance, electronics, and circuit boards. So we're talking about some very, very sophisticated technology, which now is going to be shared and is going to, in fact, be manufactured in Saudi Arabia. So that seems to be rather unprecedented. The other unprecedented element of this is the Trump administration's declaration that this is a national emergency. And that allows the administration to circumvent what otherwise would be congressional authorization pursuant to the weapons export law. So we have a rather wide definition and interpretation of what constitutes an emergency in the national security interest that's being invoked by the Trump administration in order to circumvent the Congress's otherwise authorized duty to serve as a check and balance on what is increasingly becoming a unilateral action on American foreign policy by the White House.
The U.S. has a long history of supplying various kinds of military aid and technology to Saudi Arabia without a lot of pushback, I think, in Congress in particular. Why are we seeing such pushback now?
Well, there has been pushback in the past, but we have to go quite a ways back. In the early 1980s, Congress, in fact, did push back on the White House at the time, efforts to sell the Saudis advanced reconnaissance and air surveillance aircraft, the AWACS system. Similarly, there were efforts to block the sale of advanced fighter jets to Saudi Arabia. Things have changed dramatically, particularly over the last two administrations, for two reasons. One is an increasingly antagonistic posture that the United States has toward Iran and the region, as well as the fact that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are both willing and very able customers for American weapon systems.
Talk to Saeed Khan from Wayne State University over U.S. arms deals with Saudi Arabia and latest efforts in Congress to potentially block one of the newest deals. Talk about the role of Yemen and the war in Yemen in this conversation, Saeed.
Well, in many ways, Rob, Yemen has become very much the 21st century version of the Spanish Civil War, where we really have mostly proxies that are engaged in that conflict. And in this case, it's primarily Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates on one side and Iran on the other. What is unique in this situation compared to the Spanish Civil War is that the United States has gone all in on the side of what we probably call the fascists, those who seek to go ahead and establish for themselves a by all means necessary resolution to push back on Iran and send a message to their neighbor in the region that they are going to dominate when it comes to the geopolitics of the region.
How much of a role does U.S. military aid play directly in Yemen? How much of the weapons we are providing directly or indirectly are being used in, say, bombing campaigns in Yemen?
Almost 100%, Rob, because after all, the Saudis and the UAE do not manufacture weapons of their own, with the exception of maybe some small munitions that they buy from elsewhere. When it comes to the precision-guided bombs that are supplied by the United States by way of Raytheon, as well as the delivery systems, they are all U.S. fighter jets and bombers that are involved in that process, as well as any missile payload that is being employed and deployed.
Apart from Yemen, a lot of people in Congress are raising the issue of the role of Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, often called MBS, and his suspected role related to the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi last year, and what many senators are saying, well, we haven't heard enough from Saudi Arabia about what happened there. How much is that, the killing of Khashoggi, still affecting Congress?
I think it demonstrates what the Trump administration's posture is toward not just Saudi Arabia, but toward MBS, Mohammed bin Salman himself, as well as his counterpart in the United Arab Emirates, MBZ, Mohammed bin Zayed. These two relatively young individuals are essentially the focus of America placing all of its eggs in their proverbial basket in order to look at the future of the region and, in the case of the United States, an ability to exert influence at the expense and really to the exception of anybody else, including China and Russia. Now, when it comes to the Khashoggi matter, it's important to remember that President Trump had a tepid at best response to what had happened. There is still, from his public pronouncements, skepticism that he has, even against his own intelligence agencies, that MBS had anything to do with the authorization of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi last October in Istanbul, Turkey. At the same time, the president had also mentioned, and I think now it's becoming even more resonant as to what is at the very core of the White House's policy towards Saudi Arabia, that Saudi Arabia is a very good customer when it comes to buying American weapon systems. So it really does seem to be the economics, but also what is lurking in the background is whether this is just about what is beneficial to American defense companies, or is there some kind of personal gain to be achieved by the Trump family?
We're talking to Saeed Khan right now, senior lecturer in Near Eastern and Asian Studies at Wayne State University. He's with us to talk about the latest news about a U.S. arms sale to Saudi Arabia, how that deal could hit a snag due to bipartisan efforts in the U.S. Senate. Saeed, we left that hanging there. You raised the question of possible personal gain for the Trump family in dealings with Saudi Arabia. What are you referring to?
Well, most recently, there was an article in The Guardian out of the U.K., it talks about Jared Kushner, the first son-in-law, who has a $50 million stake in an investment firm called Cadre, which seems to have mysteriously received about $90 million of cash infusion from unknown and foreign sources, including $1 million from Saudi Arabia. There was also, as we remember, back in 2017, when President Trump's first overseas trip was, in fact, to Saudi Arabia. And shortly after his convening there, there was a pledge by both Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates to donate $100 million to a World Bank fund, which was inspired by first daughter Ivanka Trump. So it still remains a bit nebulous as to whether there is personal gain to be made for the Trump Corporation, as well as its various entities and family members.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jeremy is with us in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. If I'm not happy with them selling arms, I'm not happy with us selling arms to anybody, really. But the concern is if we're not going to be the ones doing it, they're going to go somewhere else and get it. And then you're going to contend with either Russia or China supplying arms, and then they're going to get their foothold into the region even further. And then that's some issues that we're going to have to deal with down the line. So geopolitically, we're kind of like, you know, up against a wall. We don't like it, but, you know, the enemies of my enemy is my friend kind of thing.
Jeremy, thanks for the call. This is a concern that others have raised, Saeed, that if they don't buy weapons from us, other, even maybe less savory actors will step in.
Well, I think that Jerry makes a very important point. I'm not sure how much less savory one can get than profiting off the misery of Yemen. But taking that as a point, I think that that is a train that has already left the proverbial station, and it is causing a further entrenchment within the region of some of the powers that represent a far greater threat to the United States than even what is declared as Iran. We find that Iran and now even a NATO ally like Turkey are being pushed into the side of the ledger that includes China and Russia. Just recently, of course, Turkey has decided to purchase some advanced missile systems from Russia, the S-400. There has been a threat by the United States that if it were to do so, that the U.S. would withhold the delivery of advanced fighter jets, the F-35. President Recep Erdogan of Turkey has called the bluff and said that he, in fact, is looking to shop around to China and Russia when it comes to their advanced weapon systems. Now, this is quite unprecedented because, as I mentioned, Turkey has been a solid NATO ally. The idea of being upset at Turkey for buying Russian weapons is actually not that hypocritical. Greece and Bulgaria, two other NATO countries, have already done so without facing such a threat from the United States. Iran, of course, has a very good relationship with China. And moving forward, these countries are going to be vitally and strategically critical, given the fact that China is resurrecting the Silk Road, the so-called Belt and Road Initiative, that will go through Iran and Turkey. And as a result of it, the geostrategic decision by the United States to favor Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, two countries who are, in the grand scheme of things, really insignificant, and certainly their human rights records and their political alignment are not exactly congruent with American values, it seems like a rather peculiar foreign policy decision at this time.
Thanks for the call. We'll bring on Heather now in Madison. Heather, hi. Excuse me, Heather, hello.
Hi, I just think your last comment is really on the mark. It's a really difficult situation. There's lots of chess pieces on the board that are moving in different ways, and this is a little bit of our own making, given our tight relationship with the Saudis and their record. You know, historically, we've had kind of turned a blind eye to that situation, and I think it might be coming back to bite us in the butt. That's it.
Heather, thanks for the call. Saeed, what do you have to say to Heather?
I don't think I can improve on Heather's eloquence in assessing the situation. I think this idea of the chickens coming home to roost has definitely occurred. And I know that this is going to sound like a bit of Monday morning armchair quarterbacking, but we can see in the not-so-distant past what really was the linchpin that caused this to unravel. And it was the rather ill-judged invasion of Iraq, which really then dismantled what was a very delicate and precarious stability, relatively speaking, in the Middle East. Now, how does the United States come back from that? Where and how does it then exert and assert still a considerable amount of power, both militarily and financially, remains to be seen.
In our last couple minutes, Saeed, what do you make of this effort in Congress to at least try and assert some control over this kind of arms deal?
Well, I think there's three major takeaways from this. First of all, it's a bipartisan effort. Senator Todd Young, Republican from Indiana, Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut. I think that the optics are very good because it's showing that both sides of the aisle are finally coming together on some issue. The second thing that it also demonstrates is the effort made by Congress to try to take back some of its authority from what has been seen as really a categorical and a unilateral expression, and some would even argue abuse of power by the executive branch. And thirdly, the idea of the United States reasserting itself, at least from the congressional side, with an effort to engage in a foreign policy that brings a kind of balance and perhaps even a restoration to the guidance that America has provided in the region, and particularly signaling itself to some of its more traditional allies in the West.
And briefly, Saeed, do you see this emerging as maybe an issue in the presidential campaign?
It's difficult to say because there are so many issues that tend to have much more resonance when it comes to the American electorate. Of course, abortion, the U.S. Supreme Court, the economy. These are, of course, going to take up most of the oxygen in the debate. Foreign policy is usually seen as a subordinate issue. But if it's raised as a matter of a question, perhaps even a referendum or an indictment on the judgment of the White House, then it could certainly have some traction if it is framed appropriately and accurately by various candidates.
Saeed, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Rob.
That's Saeed Khan, senior lecturer in Near Eastern and Asian Studies at Wayne State University. He joined us today to talk about a bipartisan effort in the U.S. Senate aimed at blocking the Trump administration's multi-billion-dollar arms sale to Saudi Arabia.